They say that high school is one of the most formative times of your life. But after watching some of the high school hijinks films of the 80s and 90s, I have to wonder if Hollywood truly knows what the word formative means. Well, we'll throw the dictionary out the window and put National Lampoon's senior trip to the test to see if it's not that bad. Welcome one and all to It's Not That Bad, the podcast that looks for A grades in B movies. Now, every now and then, when you see the title of a film, you sit there and go, I know exactly what to expect. More often than not, it's usually something in the MCU. But nope, today we're talking about a film in a franchise that we know for the laughs that it brings. We're talking about National Lampoon's Senior Trip. And here to join me to go down this senior trip road is none other than Philip from the Adapted to Screen podcast. Dude, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Jason, hello. I'm doing very well, thank you. Thank you very much for having... This is my fourth appearance on your show. It feels like I've done more of your shows than I have of mine.
So I'm curious now, because the past times that you have been on this show, you've been bringing the horror genre. This is not that film. So what is it about National Lampoon's Senior Trip that made you want to toss this one into the hat?
Well, it was a discussion we were having, I think. I don't even know how it came up, and I think I just put it in as a suggestion, and you went, that's got a zero rating, we have to do it. So I was like, okay, that's fair enough. But this sits at number four in my top five all-time favourite films. So I think it's not the only comedy on that list, but yeah, so I thought, well, if it's got a zero rating, it needs defending, Jason. It needs to be defended.
Now, obviously, you kind of gave away a little bit of the info on this film, but yes, this is... That's okay. That's okay. You know, occasionally, we like to spoil things here, but for the record, this film is 1 year shy of 30 years old. So if you haven't watched it by now, that's on you. So spoilers like a mofo. But yes, this is one of those infamous 0% Rotten Tomatoes tomatometer score. So we are bringing the challenge on this one. We're going to sit there and try to find the good things to say about Senior Trip. But before we do, it is time to take this high school comedy and trailerize it.
In the 80s, we were treated to the best high school movies ever to hit the silver screen. The Breakfast Club, Summer School, Say Anything, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. They were movies that defined the time and shaped a generation. Now, in 1995, one film will read the Coles Notes version of the summary of 80s cinema, hit copy-paste, and Frankenfilm a script together that will prove that the state of education in 1990s Ohio is about 10 years behind the times. 80s staple Matt Frewer is the principal of Fairmount High, a school that sets the GED bar real low. His bright idea, take a bunch of misfits in detention, have them write a dissertation about the failure of the education system, and send it to the President of the United States, thereby proving the failure of the education system. With a big brain move like that, no wonder this group of ragtag misfits think learning is spelt with a U. They'll get called to the Capitol to prove once and for all that education and wording is gooder for all. Along the way, they'll drink, screw, do drugs, and in no way discover the true meaning of growing up in a film that begs the question, did someone lose the script under her desk and then find it 10 years later? Because it feels like they did. Matt Frewer stars in National Lampoon's Senior Trip. Rated 14A for academically challenged.
Oh, genius. Well done, Jason.
There are so many actors in this film that the minute their names popped up, I'm like, holy crap, they're in this film. And all of a sudden you start to make the connections like, holy crap, they were in this. Holy crap. First of all, mention Matt Frewer. Aside from being in shows like Orphan Black, one must remember that Matt Frewer is Max Headroom.
Indeed. Indeed. Or for maybe people who missed, who lived in England, even though I remember seeing it, was the nutcase from The Stand.
Yes, absolutely. Which, not a bad adaptation of Stephen King's The Stand, and probably better than the one that Prime did like years later.
I think that's probably his best of all of the TV adaptations, to be perfectly fair.
The TV adaptations, yes. There are some of the film adaptations of Stephen King's novels that have fared much better, but yes. I mean, and The Stand's a big-ass book. I remember reading it, and the first two parts of The Stand, and sorry for diatribing here while we're about to talk about Senior Trip, but we started this, so here we go. So I remember sitting down reading The Stand, and it's not exactly a short book. And the first two parts of the book, because it's in four parts, I couldn't stop turning the pages. The first two parts of the book were phenomenal. And then it started to get all mystical and weird and shit. And then you get to the end. And it doesn't end as strong as the book starts. And the TV adaptation kind of actually matches that. So yay, but maybe not so much.
I think it's difficult, isn't it, when you've got such a really good build-up of something, how do you make a really good end? And you don't really, do you?
Yeah, no.
You just go, sometimes you go, how are we going to finish this? I know. Do M-O-O-N, spells explosion. And
right. Or, you know, just do like George R.R. Martin and just not finish.
Yes, there is always that as well. Yeah, no, but no. So yes, I remember him from Max Headroom and The Stand, and then this was probably one of the next things that I remember him from. I did see him later on. Was it Timeless?
It's possible. I mean, I also remember him from Eureka, because that was a fun show as well.
I never saw that.
Maybe it's the Canadian in me, the things that we get to watch over here. But let's get into who is in this film. And there are some notable names here. So we got Matt Frewer, Valerie Mahaffey. And again, I apologize if I mess up any of these names. Remember, idiot Canadian in a basement with a microphone. The one and only Tommy Chong, Kevin McDonald, yes. Tara Sherendorf, or as we all know her now, Tara Strong, Nicole DeBoer, Catherine Rose, Danny Smith, Rob Moore, Eric Edwards, Lawrence Dane, Sergio DeZio, and this film is the cinematic debuts of Fiona Loewy and Jeremy Renner. Yes, Jeremy Renner. Frickin' Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner. The movie is directed by Kelly Macon, who also directed Kids in the Hall and the movie Kids in the Hall, Brain Candy. So now you know why Kevin McDonald's in here. He also, for those of you who like a little bit of Hugh Grant in your life, also directed Mickey Blue Eyes. The film was written by Roger Cumble, who wrote Cruel Intentions 1 and 2, and I. Marlene King, who was the exec producer and showrunner of Pretty Little Liars. The movie had a budget of $2 million and worldwide grossed a total of $4.6 million. When it was released on the September 8th, 1995 weekend, it debuted at number 9, which was the lowest of the wide release films that debuted that weekend. The number one film that weekend was To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, that debuted with $9 million. But also releasing that week, The Tie That Binds debuted at number 6 with $2.6 million, and Last of the Dogmen, which debuted at number 7 with $2.5 million. Senior Trip had a debut weekend of $2.18 million. So it basically made its money back in week one and didn't last that long after.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Now, we did mention that this film has the wonders of a 0% tomatometer. The audience score for this film is actually 55%, and Yahoo Movies, yeah, remember when Yahoo Movies was a thing? actually gave it a B grade. But let's deep dive now. Let's get into this and figure out why the critics gave this a 0% and why they are so drastically wrong. And of course, we start with Matt Frewer, who played Principal Todd Moss. How was he for you?
He was brilliant. I think it was... it's very easy to see the character at the start, and is I think looking back, because I obviously rewatched and haven't watched it for a while, but he's just kind of what his character seems, a bit of down on his luck, resigned that he's always going to be the principal of this really rubbish school, and he has to deal with the students that he has to deal with, and they're all losers, and his wife's left him, and his staff just ridiculous. But I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed every scene that he was in. I thought he added a lot of comedic value.
There were certain aspects of Principal Moss that I liked. The fact that he was constantly on his stopwatch and making sure that everything was to time, and like really almost obsessive about it. And so these were the aspects I'm like, this is gonna be great. You have someone who is so fastidious about everything being on time and everyone being on schedule, and yet he's basically trying to herd cats with the school because the entire school just feels like it's on drugs, let's be honest. But the problem though is that he's almost too quirky to be the foil. It's almost like he's a weird Kirkland brand Mr. Belding.
Well, I think if he had a school bus full of Lisas and Steves, he wouldn't be that way. He'd be much more relaxed. He'd probably be more himself. He'd probably be thinking further on the line about how the students are going to make him proud in front of the president, and he's going to get a promotion, or he's going to get a pay, or, you know, whereas he's got that lot to deal with. So he has to go to the extreme of you've got 10 minutes, because 10 minutes really probably meant 20. But like, if I tell them 10 minutes and it's 15, we're still on schedule. The fact that the bus turned up 45 minutes late didn't really help him either, did it, in all fairness?
Well, the problem though is that when you have an authority figure, and the authority figure is supposed to be the foil for the high schoolers, you either make him a complete hard ass or you make him a more likable, just kind of wishes they were kind of one of the students. I mean, that's where the Mr. Belding thing comes into play, because I have a feeling like he feels like he wants to be part of things, But of course, these students just are just like in and out. They just really don't want to be there. Or make him the hard ass. Make him the kid who's like, or make him the principal who would like lock the door if you're 1 second late kind of thing. Like, he's encouraging the students to hurry up and get in the school and get to the assembly and get to class. Like, it's almost like he cares too much for you to hate him, but he's not likable enough for you to like him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. But I think your point there where you were saying about if the 1 second late, he's going to lock the door, that happened, but just in reverse, which was, I think, where maybe, like you said, he should be doing this, but he isn't doing this, but it happens to him. And that's the funny bit, if you see what I mean. So this isn't just someone's, I can't imagine that someone's gone, right, I was going to write this down, and then that's it. They've written it, and they've thought about it, and they've gone over it, and they've gone over it, and they've gone, what would it be? And someone like you would go, well, he'd lock the door, wouldn't he, if the 1 second late, go, why don't we just do it to him? And the bus driver does it to him. It's just, but like you can see that
he's good in the role. I just wish the role was either fleshed out or focused a bit more, not developed more, because I think the development is there, but focused in the points that they gave him. Jeremy Renner, who plays Dags, and it's interesting because Renner's name is lower down in the credit list, yet it feels like he's definitely the star of the film.
Yes.
This is his cinematic debut. So how hard was it to watch this and not sit there and go, you're a f***ing Avenger?
Well, I think I've probably seen this maybe late 90s, so he wasn't when I first watched. But the one thing about his character that always puzzled me was him and Reggie were the stoners, so maybe you could say like a Jay and Silent Bob type duo, but there were two complete opposites, if you know what I mean. Like Reggie was the mega stoner and Dags was just his mate, because you needed Dags to be, because he was really the lead character, he had to have some semblance of normality and thought, and to make the story, because you couldn't have two Reggies. That wouldn't work.
No.
So you had to have, he was playing a stoner that wasn't a stoner, if you know what I mean. It was, they needed that character to be a little bit more normal than the other. So where you got that Jay and Silent Bob comparison, and I think this probably came out before anything Kevin Smith did, or maybe a year after, and they went, oh, I know what we'll do. We'll have a Jay and Silent Bob style comedy duo in there. And I don't really think, to be honest, I don't think that Reggie offered very much in the way of comedy. It was more Dags than Reggie, but that's just me.
Yeah, there's going to be, let's be honest, there's going to be a lot of comparisons to a lot of films from the 80s and the early 90s. You know, and as I'm watching this, you know, he's too smart and too, like, he's the plan maker. He's the guy that everyone tends to follow around. So he's not the stoner like Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know, you could take a look at Wayne and Garth and sit there and say, okay, well, Dags is Wayne and Reggie is Garth. I take a look at Jeremy Renner in this, and the first comparable that I draw is Dean Cameron, who played Dave Marshak in 1991's Ski School, which is definitely one of those, another one of those, like, it's a school-ish setting, but it's a ski school, and he's definitely the party guy. And if you ever get a chance to watch Ski School, trust me, it is a stupid fun time. Like, literally put your brain on vacation. Dags feels like Marshak in this, but the thing is, there's no development. Like, Dags doesn't progress at all in this. He's just Dags, which then makes me wonder, why would someone like Lisa even consider making a pros and cons list to dating Dags?
So I think he wasn't he either was the only person who had no actual development all the way through the movie, or there might have been a couple of others that suffered the same fate. I think the reason why she was making a pros and cons is, one, because it was in the script. secondly, I think we've all, well, I would say I'm not speaking for you, Jason, but I think, you know, you've always got that kind of studious girl who looks around the school and goes, well, actually he's good looking and he's a bit dim. And I think she even says this to him later on, right, in the third act, you know, just, I'll use you and then I'll get rid of you. And then no one's going to know and I'll be quite happy and you'll be happy and that's it.
I get why he likes Lisa. I understand that part. And it's interesting because at one point Dags asks Virus, the total AV geek, you know, what do you think about Lisa? He's like, oh yeah, no, I had sex with her and she's a total head case. And you sit there and go, okay, so he's just kind of trying to be cool and whatnot. Now I start to question if Virus was lying or not, but we'll get to Virus in a second here. But since we're talking about her, Fiona
That's
Loey,
a very good point, actually, Jason. I'd actually not thought about it that way, but yeah, right? Probably.
The funny thing is, when we're talking about Fiona Loey, and again, I do apologize if I messed up her name. I'm just not as familiar with her work as some of the other actors that I am, as Lisa Perkins. And as I'm watching her in this, and again, you get those comparables because this film feels like it should have been released in the late 80s, early 90s. It feels at least 5 or 10 years a little too late. I'm instantly thinking of Ione Skye in Say Anything because she has that kind of feel to her, just minus the head case-esque-ness of it. So you could then compare Jeremy Renner to a John Cusack in Say Anything, and that relationship made sense. You know, not that John Cusack in that film was a stoner, but he's definitely, you know, not as, you know, not in the same societal circles that Ione Skye's character was. Mm-hmm. But how was Fiona as Lisa for you?
Yeah, I thought she played a great character. I think maybe if I could draw an additional comparison, Jason, to people who aren't as highbrow as you, probably a Daniel LaRusso and whatever her name was in Karate Kid. You know, they were...
Oh, Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah, well, yes, but I used Daniel LaRusso, didn't I? I used the character names. But yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's... You know, there's a dynamic there where he's the poor boy from another town and she's a rich girl from the north side of town and so on and so forth. And what would they have in common? Well, you know, it's all Romeo and Juliet, isn't it? And I think it's the story as old as time. So I thought it was good. But I thought Lisa was, she was obviously integral because she's the one who wrote the letter and she had to be in there because you had to have a love story. And, I thought she was fine. I thought she, the head case bit, especially when she beats up the bounty burger geezer at the end. I mean, she gives him a good hiding. There's no messing about that. That was like a 3-shot and done. And the fact that he was unconscious clearly for about, 12 to 14 hours at the bar and no one's moved him whatsoever. But no, I thought she was great. Yeah.
There's the other thing too. Like she does that. And it's never really mentioned again. Like, you see someone do that, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, so maybe I'm not that into you, or maybe I'm just a little scared of you. And that's where she also does start to take control of that relationship. So I can see how that's pivotal, and it's almost like she's, you know, and again, it's almost like she's two characters. At the beginning of the film, she's very much like the, and again, drawing another comparable, the Carol Seaver character from Growing Pains, the TV show, where like very studious and surrounded by people not so much. And then at the end, she's almost like this complete badass who knows exactly what she wants. She's going to take it and you do not have any control over her.
It's a little bit like Colton when he stands up for himself in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
You know, after the dance scene, because everyone's got to do the Carlton. Rob Moore, who played Reggie Barry, the Garth to Dags' Wayne, the absolute total stoner in this. How was he?
Well, I think I'd mentioned earlier on, I don't really think he added very much, but what he did do was add that side, the whole side plot with the crossing guard. And I just, it's like there was... I think he even was self-aware that, like, he's sitting at the back of the bus and he looks and he can see Travis with O'Hara and he looks at everyone else and he's like, no one's going to believe me. And then there's the bit where like the police are pulling the van over and he's got the massive bag of weed. So like any normal person, they just eat all the weed rather than stash it in someone else's bag. It's just, yeah, it's, no, he was complete comedy relief. It was funny. So there wasn't really much to his character, but he was very funny indeed.
He reminds me a little bit, at least as far as the character goes, like Ethan Suplee in Mallrats, where he's just sitting there and staring at the painting and it's like, I want to see the boat, you know, like it's kind of that comedic relief character where you can kind of come back to him and enjoy the joke as it is. But you know, as I'll even read you what I wrote down here, to quote Douglas Adams, he's mostly harmless.
Yeah, no, and I thought him and Reggie worked really well together. It was, you know, okay, this is like the super stoner and the one who kind of, right, this is what we're doing, get in the car, we're going and doing this. I like Reggie. I liked all of them, to be honest. I thought everyone was great. I think the film's brilliant.
Yeah, it's curious to take a look at that and sit there and question which one would be Bill and which one would be Ted, because you can kind of see a very similar kind of, you know, you have to think that Reggie would be, you know, Ted Theodore Logan Esquire.
Well, it's strange because which one out of Bill and Ted were the smarter one? They were both pig thick, weren't they? And it's just, and you're just like, how are these two operating anything like machinery, toothbrushing? At least you know that Dags kind of had something about him, that he could do something.
Oh, yeah. But since we're talking and making some Wayne's World comparables too, because as I mentioned, you know, Reggie's kind of like the Garth to Dags' Wayne. Mm-hmm. Catherine Rose, who played Wanda Baker, this is the girl with the hair completely in front of her face and eventually ends up with Reggie. And again, I need to draw the comparable here, right? Because there's two comparables that come up here. Because of the almost infatuation that Wanda has for Reggie, I instantly think of Betty Jo, who worked in the permits office in Wayne's World 2, as played by Olivia Dabo, you know, the girl who basically dressed like Wayne and acted like, dressed like Garth and acted like Garth. But then you can also draw a comparable to Jennifer Jason Leigh from The Breakfast Club. And now she's like the shy emo girl who eventually gets the guy. I mean, it's a trope. It's an absolute trope. But I actually really liked Catherine Rose in this role. But how did Wanda work for you?
I think, to be honest, she was quite invisible throughout most of the film, so to speak. She was in a lot of the scenes, but she didn't offer anything. And then, obviously, subtly, she's kind of cracking on to Reggie. And it isn't until the end where Dags goes, she's putting it on you, mate. And he's like, okay. And then, obviously, that little, you know, there's a massive party and there's them two watching Friday the 13th, and that's how they kind of get together, so to speak, on conversations about Freddy and Jason.
I just find it funny that in that moment where she's like, do you ever think that Jason has dreams and nightmares and can be attacked by Freddy Krueger? And literally they just wrote Freddy versus Jason in this film. In one dialogue.
No, exactly. Yeah. Which I quite like that. I like things in films that kind of predict things that happen, or you can go, so the person who wrote Freddy versus Jason watched this film and went, that's a really good idea. Yeah, so if there's anything to come out of this movie, it's the fact that they came up with Freddy versus Jason.
Valerie Mahaffey, who played Miss Milford, the fill-in typing teacher after the regular typing teacher dies.
That's so funny. That's literally one of the best scenes. All right, Jason, tell them all about it.
Okay, so they're in typing class, and this old teacher is just, you know, H space, which I never took a typing class like that, so I don't know where that came from. But then he starts to have the heart attack, and he starts like virus sitting there going, and literally writing verbatim the help me noises that he's making, and then he dies. And all of a sudden, now we have Miss Milford. But how was Miss Milford for you?
Well, you see now, when you're talking about foil earlier on with Principal Mosh, she was his foil. She was the, like, you could tell she was the prim and proper, talk to everyone properly, so on and so forth. Although you can tell behind her eyes, she has a completely different story going on and could probably turn completely mental at any point. But I thought she was great. I loved the one thing that actually got me thinking when I watched this back was, oh no, and they didn't did that. I was going to say, actually, Steve probably, because Steve ended up getting tied up. He probably watched them having sex all evening through the window.
I love the fact that Miss Milford is straight up like all rainbows and unicorns about, you know, being a teacher, and this is her life's calling. And, you know, like as she's telling Tommy Chong the story, like, and then in grade eight, and it's like, oh my God, I can easily see her being that person. So then her, like the moment where she eats the box of spiked chocolates and gets all drunk and then jumps Principal Moss. And by the way, we did warn you that there were spoilers. So if you haven't watched the film by now and you're still listening, why bother? Just listen to us. But the thing is, I like her in this because she's that, you know, completely positive, optimistic, and way in the wrong school kind of character that you want in this. I only wish, and this is just me here, and getting back to Principal Moss. So at this point, there's this moment where you can either like Principal Moss or you can dislike Principal Moss. And it's when they're trying to check into the nice hotel in Washington, and he's totally on the make with the woman working the check-in counter. And it's just like, oh, you're a smarmy m-. And why would Miss... Now we don't want Miss Milford, who's all sunshines and rainbows, and we don't want her near you because you're gross. You're a perv, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think that was probably, you know, that's the only time he's had to show off in the whole film. You know what I mean? Because he's literally been downtrodden all the way through to that point. And he's like, you know what? I'm here. I'm going to tell her I can get you some stationery from the presidents. And then they get kicked out for breaking the vase immediately and end up in the sex dungeon hotel.
And the other thing too is he's watching porn when she shows up at his hotel room. He quickly changes the channel and it's freaking Lassie. And she's like, oh, let's watch Lassie. Like at this point, Miss Milford is, you know, awesome. She's the kind of teacher that the students should want to see happy. But Principal Moss has gone down this road where we just don't like his character. Which this is also one of those movies where at the end of the film they do this the freeze frames of the students. They give a little blurb as to what they do afterwards. So his blurb makes sense. And I'm just going to let you watch the movie and figure out what the blurb is because we can't spoil everything. So now you just skip to the end. But I liked Miss Milford. I wish Principal Moss was written in a way that would make that scene a little bit more fulfilling for Principal Moss and not just an icky morning after for Miss Milford.
Yes, no, and I think when she comes into the room, she goes, oh, you're watching Lassie. All I get on my TV is porn. And he was like, oh, really?
No porn in here. I'm just glad it wasn't like some kind of like Lassie porn and that changed and all of a sudden like, oh, I guess this channel's porn too.
And to be fair, I think Principal Moss does redeem himself because he does stick up for Miss Milford against the senator and his suggestions. Does he call her a whore? Is that what he?
Oh, he does. He does. Yeah. Which at that point, that would have been another good opportunity for Lisa to punch someone out.
Yes. Well, it would have been a good chance for Principal Moss to do that, I think.
But missed moment, and Miss Milford is probably regretting their trip to Washington. Danny Smith, who was Virus, the AV nerd. Again, another total high school movie trope. But how was Virus for you?
I really liked Virus. I thought he was great. I thought it was a bit creepy. Is not just a teenager like him a bit creepy? I've got many brothers. I've got loads of brothers, and at least one of them reminds me of him. And because he was kind of central, to be perfectly honest. He was central to the whole thing. A lot I know said about what's her name with the hair?
Wanda.
Where she was quite invisible throughout the film. He was kind of invisible throughout the film, but he was integral in all the parts. He was integral at the start when he starts playing the music and the High on Life assembly goes pear-shaped. He helps get all the beers in. He's in each important bit of the film. And obviously my favorite bit when Tara Strong puts it on him. And that was my absolute favorite bit, because I think I would have reacted exactly the same.
I think there's a thing too, is that in his presence, not there, there's that moment, which then makes you completely question if he actually had sex with Lisa on the last trip kind of thing. So there's that, but also too, the way that he's like, oh, you should go for Meg. Well, she's a lesbian. Yeah. But if anyone can change her, it's you. So it's almost, he's almost there to justify the cool leadership factor of Dags.
Yes, the behavior. Yes, indeed. It's like, because like Dags, like, well, she's a lesbian. It's like, yeah, but you can turn her. It's just like, because it's that easy. Although then we did watch Chasing Amy a few years later. So maybe Kevin Smith stole that idea as well, perhaps. There's a lot of films coming out of this one movie here, Jason.
I'm starting to think so, yeah. But the other thing too is that with Virus being part of the crew, it actually sets up the school to be like, the school itself is filled with washouts and stoners, and everyone seems to be on the same playing field. You don't get too many different types of, you know, it's not like a movie like PCU where everyone is completely segregated into different types of cliques and social status and the like. And here it's like everyone else, and then there's Nisser.
That's not necessarily true, because they give you a little insight at the very start. You've got the Samuel L. Jackson character, Herbert, I think his name was, who was just sitting there reading. You had the lesbian gang, which Meg was a part of. You had, you know, the stoner gang. You had like the popular people. Then you had some jocks. So, you know, they kind of give you the idea that the school was full of these different types of groups. You just don't see them after that.
Yeah, it's not as clear cut as a movie like PCU that almost made fun of the entire idea of everyone in their little groups and cliques and whatever. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Nisser, Steve Nisser is played by Sergio DeZio, the student president head and total prep in this. Most useless character in the damn film, but how was he for you?
Well, I've got, it's one of those, I think we've just touched on it there. Like, what the hell is he doing at that school? Like, how are his parents not getting him into a better school? Like, I don't know how the school system works in America, but geez, if you've got a bit of cash, and clearly, like, you know, I'm going to Yale. So, and, you know, and he's, you know, he's well-dressed, he's well-spoken, if they're 17, he's got a mind of a 35-year-old man. You know, he's everything you expect in the student body president should be. What the hell is he doing there? Which was, but then that one scene with him and Matt Frew is when he called, I bet you wonder why I've called you to my house. Yes, I need something from you. Not that. I just thought it was brilliant. But no, there was nothing. There was, like, he played literally no part in the film. Nothing of any note. I don't know, to be honest. I don't know why he was there, in all fairness. But other than when the senator comes, he goes, right, get the kids up, and he opens a door and he's all been strapped up in bondage gear overnight. And he's like, oh,
But there's the thing, like, you know, the principal gets Nisser to be the mole, to befriend Dags so he can keep tabs on him. And then he does nothing of the sort and keeps to himself. Like, why are you even there? And if the principal's on the trip as well, why does he need a mold? It's like, it just seems extraneous. I get the preppy. And also, and I need to ask, because this high school seems, it's that people like Dags and Reggie are the norm, and people like Nisser are like the outliers. Yeah. So what school with a population like that is going to vote for someone like Steve Nisser to be student body president?
And nobody was voting, and Steve was the only person who did.
You're probably not wrong. You're probably not wrong. Tommy Chong, who played Red, the bus driver, you know, there for a good time, but not for a long time. But how cool was it to have Tommy Chong in this total stoner film?
Well, I thought it was as soon as he opened it, I knew who he was. I think other than Matt Frewer, I think he was the only person I recognized when I first watched this film. I was like, oh, it's Tommy Chong. And that was then you've got that journey. That was brilliant. That whole bus ride was absolutely fantastic. The whole interaction, like you said, with Miss Milford when she's banging on when I was 7 and then when I was 8. And you could see all the lads getting the beer and he's like, yeah, carry on, bab. Carry on with the story while the lads get the beers in. And, you know, smoking his bong and the horse tranquilizers and, you know, the bit where Principal Moss is like completely comatose and he's just hitting his head off the window with the steering wheel, just giving it that. Which is those little tiny bits. And the fact that, do we spoil it or do we not spoil it?
We've warned everyone enough.
No, fair enough. No, it's basically when he's dead and he's just got his arm in the air with the bonk in his hand. I just think it's brilliant. It's just like that 10 minutes he was in it, or 15 minutes or whatever it was. That was just fantastic. And the whole, what's the magic word? What's the magic word? Rock and roll, dude.
Tommy Chong is proof that apparently the Ohio education system doesn't work.
Exactly, yeah. But that's what Reggie can see himself being. Like, I think at that point, he was like, I could be a bus driver. I can off the school bus. I can do it.
He's the guy that never grew up and won't last past the film. Kevin McDonald, who played Travis Lindsay, the crossing guard in this, who is completely and utterly Star Trek obsessed, which we're going to get to that in a second here. But first, how was the subplot for you? Not just Kevin McDonald, but how was this subplot?
I think that this was my favorite bit of the film. And I think he's probably my favorite character if I've spoiled anything there, because he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. You're introduced to Travis, the crossing guard, and he's sat in his little chair and there's a girl trying to cross the road and he's going, go on, carry on. He's like, mate, are you going to get up and stop the traffic? And she ends up getting hit because he just won't get up. And then the blood feud begins when Dags asks him directions and he doesn't know. So Reggie gives him a bit of verbal and then he gets all mad about it and he's trying to stop the people from driving. And then Miyoski has to run off with his bike and obviously he gets a lot weirder because in his house he's made his own Enterprise bridge and he's got cardboard cutouts and blow up dolls. And he was really, really good and he played it as straight as you could play it as well. He wasn't playing it for laughs. He was the person who believed this, if you know what I mean. It was and then he takes the family hostage and he was brilliant in the whole film. Yeah, he was brilliant.
I mean, it makes sense that it's directed by someone who directed Kids in the Hall. And of course, he is one of the Kids in the Hall. And if you ever had the opportunity to watch Kids in the Hall, A, do so. But B, it feels like a Kids in the Hall kind of character sketch added into the film. I think it's hilarious. It's funnier in hindsight when you realize that Nicole DeBoer, who is in this film, mm-hmm. went on to go play Ezri Dax in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So yeah. It's almost at that same level when you watch The Terminal and you see Zoe Saldana in that film and her character is someone who happens to go to Star Trek conventions. And then later on, she's cast as Lieutenant Uhura in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek films. It's, again, before its time. It predicted the future.
Yeah, this is like when people talk about what Simpsons are predicted, and now we're going to be talking about what National Lampoon Senior Trip predicted.
Yeah, it's in the pantheon. It's with the Simpsons and 30 Rock, and then Senior Trip. Lawrence Dane, who played Senator Lerman, your typical evil politician in this, I would say decidedly evil enough.
Yes. You always have to have some kind of adversity, and this was the adversity, wasn't it? He's been told about these kids. He saw them. He goes, right, this is a really good way to embarrass the president and get my bill put forward. And I've got a mate who's got some fast food chain, and I can get his fast food chain in all the schools, and with a big fat contribution to my presidential campaign. A banner burger in every school, make me billions. Loved him. Thought he was great.
Okay. I'm going to do a quick speed run through some of these last characters here, because while their characters are there, they're not really large characters. So we can kind of speed run through these. Eric Edwards, who played Miyoski. Ooh, did this plot not age well?
Oh no. Right. I love Miyoski. Right. I think he's great. He had some brilliant bits. The bit with the creepy teacher, when they're in detention and he's like getting high on the Bunsen burner. The whole blonde Jap from China. Just like everything I think about him was hilarious.
I mean, you have to understand, and you mentioned Kevin Smith earlier, so I'm going to actually pull Kevin Smith's explanation in An Evening with Kevin Smith when he was trying to explain how Chasing Amy is not anti-LGBTQ, because the character who's like, oh, all she needs is a good deep dicking, he's the idiot character. And yes, by the idiot saying it, it proves that the statement is wrong. Miyoski is definitely an idiot character in this film. So everything that he says, take it with an absolute grain of salt, that it's meant to be wrong and stupid.
Yes, and if it's not hit home any more than what it should be, he's eating chalk at a press conference. So this is a kid who has got a bag of Wotsits the size of my body at the start of the film, and he eats chalk and hasn't had a change of clothes in probably what the week that the film is kind of like spanned. It's like spanned a week and the kid's still in the sand clubber. So yeah, no, I really like Miyoski. I thought he was quite funny.
Michael Blake, who played Herbert Jones, the guy who looks like Samuel L. Jackson in this. I get it, but why is he there?
Well, he didn't offer anything, did he? He didn't offer anything. Did Samuel L. Jackson look exactly like this in Jackie Brown? He was kind of just predicted and predicted and predicted. I'm sure there's stuff on the cutting room floor with him in it somewhere. Maybe they just said we need some diversification in the movie because it's extremely white.
You're not wrong there. And I completely understand that, you know, if you want to have a cross section in your cast, I get it. And I think you could have done more with Herbert Jones, but I mean, like, he does nothing but sit and brood the entire time.
Well, it's the same as in Summer School. You have that that really big black lad in Summer School. He goes, "Can I have the key to the toilet?" And then you don't see him again until the very end. And he's got like 100% on his exam or whatever. It's just like maybe you just need to tick a box, and there you go, box ticked. We don't have to worry about that. It's done now.
Tara Strong, which, if the name sounds familiar, she has done so much voice work. And I'm telling you right now, if ever there was a Mount Rushmore of voice actors, Tara Strong needs to be on that Mount Rushmore. But here, live action, as Carla Morgan, the class horn dog, how was she for you?
Oh, I loved her. Yeah, I loved her. Yeah, I thought she was great. Again, didn't have very much to do, particularly, although Proposition People for Sex, that was about it, really. But I thought she played the character very well.
and Nicole DeBoer, who played Meg. So basically her entire character arc is that she was lesbian, and that's about it. Not much for her to work with in this.
No, and again, I think that this film was probably closer to the 2 hour mark than the hour and a half that we got, because there was a lot of characters in there that could have had a lot of development and a lot more screen time and just didn't. I think Virus was propositioning a woman at the party, and I think she ended up dancing with Meg at one point. So it was just kind of like, yeah, there was like, yeah, either the film was a lot longer and they cut it right down, or they said, we can't just have four people on this road trip. We need to fill the bus.
So I'm going to ask you then, since you mentioned that, since I'm talking about filling the bus here, do you feel like there are too many characters in this and that the focus gets lost because of the size of the cast?
No, because I don't really think it matters. You can't just have four people or five people or six people, because it makes it a different film. You've got to have that group of people that need herding, that you can put in different scenes here, there, and everywhere for a laugh. I mean, again, Steve, he's like every scene he's in, something funny's happening. So the high on life thing, that's funny. The thanks for coming to my house, that's funny. The getting tied up and being revealed, that's funny. And so he's only really in three bits, but each one is very funny. And I think that's what they do with everyone, more or less. Everyone has got, so if you've got 12 people, you can guarantee 36 laughs.
So let me put it in a different way then too as well. It does feel like a Franken film. And if you're watching this, you sit there and say, oh, they're all in attention. Oh, that's straight from Breakfast Club. Oh, you know, he likes this girl. So that's kind of like Say Anything. Oh, he likes this girl. That's kind of like, again, Breakfast Club or Wayne's World 2. We've drawn a lot of comparables to a lot of films that came before this, you know, and not just the ones that clearly it came up with in the script itself. But I guess the question is it too similar to those films? Because at points, it almost feels like a parody of the genre, kind of like how Not Another Teen Movie was.
Yeah, but isn't that really what, not what National Lampoon do, but they are lampooning. It's a lampoon. So they take all those bits and they lampoon them. Isn't that it? Isn't that the whole point of the film? But enough that they've actually got some characters with some development, and there is a happy ending for most people. You could say that about any film, couldn't you, really? You could say about any martial art film, any action film. They're all the same. They have the same structure. They have the same struggles. You know, it's either love, money, or revenge. And that's that, isn't it?
Well, since you mentioned National Lampoons, I mean, obviously when someone says the words National Lampoon, you instantly think of the vacation films. You know,
yes,
Vacation,
of course.
European Vacation, Christmas Vacation. And then there's all these other films. Like Loaded Weapon 1 is a National Lampoon's film. This is
exactly.
Van Wilder. Replicate apparently is a National Lampoon's film. There are so, Dorm Days is a National Lampoon's film. And really, once you realize that all of these films, and this is, again, according to Wikipedia, you can put a National Lampoon title on any movie if you pay a licensing fee. So it's marvelous. Not like National Lampoon has made all of these films, but it's just one of those things where it's like, if you're looking to, I guess, expand or at least make it a more recognizable property to, I mean, the National Lampoon's thing, we all know National Lampoon's films, one or the other kind of thing. So I guess the question becomes, do you think this film would have done better if it was just released as Senior Trip and not National Lampoon Senior Trip?
Well, it's an interesting one. I don't know, because I think what they've done, what the film's done, you've got one recognisable name in Matt Frewer and then Tommy Chong, and then you haven't got a lot of recognisable people. So it's either going to hit or it's either going to hit or it's going to miss. And in the end, they doubled the money on it, didn't they? So, you know, it's one of those. It's going to be, and it's, I think, like you said, you know, it's a, what, a 1994, 95 stoner film, basically. It's a stoner road trip high school comedy. And is it a bit out of place? Perhaps, especially if you subscribe to your way of thinking, it is a little bit. But then you could say that actually stoner movies kind of kicked on from there. You know, you had like Joe's Apartment. You had, I think, you know, Dave Chappelle. I think it was Dave Chappelle in Joe's Apartment. I think he was, or he did another, or no, Half Baked. He did Half Baked. So, the, and then obviously the Joe and Silent Bob. So you could actually say that that might have been the kickstart to, oh, we can make movies about weed and they could be funny and we can make money and market them at children.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. If you take a look at the films that are, you know, National Lampoons, but made not by the original company, right? Again, Loaded Weapon 1, Van Wilder, Replicate, Going the Distance, Barely Legal, Dorm Days. Like, it's definitely, the minute you put National Lampoons on the title, you kind of know what to expect. And I think that's actually a good thing, because I think on its own, this doesn't have the star power to drive people to the theater. I get that. Exactly. So I have a feeling that adding National Lampoons to the title almost gave it that extra draw ability factor, because really, without it, it's just a made in Canada film. And I say that because how do you say it's a Canadian film without saying it's a Canadian film? Listen to the damn soundtrack. You got Our Lady Peace on the soundtrack, which we just did an episode on. There can only be one for Our Lady Peace, so go listen to that one. If I remember correctly, I heard the Rainbow Butt Monkeys during the movie, which, if you like the Rainbow Butt Monkeys, we covered their album, their first album, over on Spin, Shuffle, Skip, so go listen to that one. But, I mean, this soundtrack also kicks ass.
Oh, it was really good. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really into that kind of music, but I enjoyed it most definitely. I thought the soundtrack was really good.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is that you think about movies like the American Pie films, because obviously American Pie came after this. But
great soundtrack on that first one as well.
Well, exactly. American Pie really kind of cornered the market on teen comedy soundtracks. This kind of felt like it laid the groundwork for that, because this one, it's up there with a movie like PCU and maybe Encino Man. But I think this soundtrack stands above a lot of the other ones.
Yeah, there's not a lot of films where you go, that's a really good soundtrack, that was. What did we watch? I think I went with my father-in-law and we watched something and we were like, that was a really good soundtrack. I can't even remember what it was now. No, I don't remember. But yeah, there are few and far between films that have really good soundtracks, and this was one of them.
Yeah. By the way, if you've never heard of the Rainbow Butt Monkeys, yes, you have. They're Finger 11.
I've still not heard of that either. No.
Okay. I'm just going to send you like a Canadian band's care package CD do. And yeah. Just send that over to you.
You should do.
All right. So obviously the show is called It's Not That Bad. And if we're taking a look at the critic score at 0%, obviously nothing is that bad. So let's take a look at the audience score, 55%. How close do you think that 55% is to how this film should be perceived?
I think it's fair. I think so, because everyone has a different opinion and not everyone will put their opinion in, but I think it's a really, really funny film. There's not many films that have that level of jokes. I want to say level of jokes. I just mean, if you didn't like that, here's another one. If you didn't get that one, here's another one. If you're too busy laughing at that one and you miss this one, then there's this one. And it was just all the way through. There was just, it's something that they teach in stand-up comedy, at least, is either a laugh every 15 seconds or one big laugh every minute, and you got that all the way through.
The other thing I'm going to give this movie credit for is that despite the fact that it's a stoner comedy, so of course they're going to have a lot of drug and drinking references in it, it's not too raunchy. So if you're a young teen, this movie is fairly accessible to you.
Well, I think it kind of picks up towards the end. Myoski's dream sequence when he's dressed as a sumo wrestler and squashes his girlfriend who's in her bra and knickers. The the bit with Tara Strong and Virus, and then the bit where Lisa says, "We're going to have sex," and then they wake up in bed. But yeah, other than those bits, it's not raunchy at all, really. And you kind of, I think, I don't know whether it's a PG or a 12 or whatever, but obviously ratings wise, they probably wanted as many bums on seats, didn't they, in the cinema?
Well, I mean, at 14A, it's not, I think it's age appropriate. Like, if you're 15 years old, you're going to laugh at this, you know, and it's okay to laugh at this film. It's, there are some good, funny moments in it. At 0%, any film at 0%, kind of feels like you need to be strapped to a chair with something holding your eyes like you're in A Clockwork Orange to have to watch this. There's no way this film should be at 0%.
Well, I think there's two films that I would put in at a 0% and be able to justify it. And one was Hellraiser 9, I think, which was just completely dreadful. And the last Rambo Last Blood, I thought that was absolutely diabolical. And I don't know what was going on or who thought any of it was a good idea. But if any film should get 0%, those two should. This should be, I mean, if it was me, I think I might probably say 8 out of 10 for me, because I just thought it was really funny.
I mean, I know I've gone on copious numbers of rants over the years, voicing my displeasure at The Dead Don't Die. And I know that that film doesn't even qualify for It's Not That Bad. So I'm going to sit there and say it's not that good. But I wouldn't even give that a 0%. Like, you really have to have someone sitting in an open room, pants down and shit on the floor for an hour and a half for me to even think that it's a 0% film.
Exactly, yeah, because there's always some, I mean, if you're prepared to, I think this is the thing, if you're prepared to watch a film all the way through, then there's something that you like about it. If you're watching a film and you go, this ain't for me, 15 minutes in, okay, it's not for me. I don't go online and go, right, 0. You know what I mean? I just don't. It's like, I got better things. I turned it off for a reason. I've got better things to do with my time.
Right. The teen pregnancy educational film shown in this movie is closer to 0% than the actual movie that it's in.
And that was even funnier because of the creepy teacher.
Right.
That was brilliant. No, it's fantastic. It was just,
I don't know, Fast Eddie. I don't want to get pregnant.
And it just the fact that the kid's called Fast Eddie, I loved it. There's nothing to dislike about that this film, other than, and perhaps, you know, again, like we talked about the Stand's ending. I think the ending on this is like a bit but you've got to have that kind of ending, you know, because you can't, how do you end the film? That is, and it's not a crescendo, it's a, but you know, what you're going to do, most films are, they give you the little freeze frame at the end to kind of fulfill you. The best film that I've watched this year that did an ending, which was brilliant, was Clue. And I know it's a 1985 film, but my kids love Cluedo. So I was like, right, we're going to watch, because I've not seen it before. I don't know. Well, you clearly have, Jason.
Oh, yes.
And absolutely no spoilers in that, but you get multiple endings and it's just like, this is brilliant. That's the way you want to end the film, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, that's, if they could have done that with National Lampoon's Senior Trip and had multiple endings, perhaps. But yeah, the ending's a bit flat, but you get the stills at the end and and you go away feeling good about yourself. And I think that's really the most important thing about a comedy.
It's funny, as you were talking about Clue, and yes, I freaking love Clue. It's a brilliant freaking film. And it does not qualify because it sits at a 71% tomatometer.
Because it's brilliant.
Yeah. Right? But, over at Metacritic, it has a score of 41%. That is criminal.
Yes, because... well, I don't know. Do we have to do a whole episode about this now, Jason? Have you just dragged me into another bloody episode with you? I can't even speak, Jason. I can't speak. It's a brilliant film.
Yeah, if you have not scene, Clue, you are not doing life right. So definitely go see that. But I don't know how Metacritic has a 41 score on this one. That is criminal. All right, Philip, it is time. So who is your MVP of National Lampoon's Senior Trip?
Oh, it's got to be Travis. Travis, the crossing guard, because he was brilliant. He just added a different dimension to the film. It would have been a lot more, I think it probably would have got boring if it was just the kids all the way there, because what can you do in a bus all the way there? But no, Travis was brilliant. I thought he was excellent.
Before I name my MVP, I need to give Valerie Mahaffey a shout out as the typing teacher. Because I think she was great. I think she was a ton of fun. I think she was absolutely adorable as Miss Milford. But no, my MVP goes to Jeremy Renner. Not just because he did well in this, but remember, this is his very first film. And he carried the entire thing on his shoulders. Like, he really did. Yeah. You know, to come in, first film, lower building, and steal the show, kudos to Jeremy Renner for this one.
He was very good. He was very good indeed.
Yep. He had a Hawkeye for talent in this one, I think. Sorry, I was bad. It was bad. Bad host. All right, Philip, please, before we go, remind our viewers about the Adapted to Screen podcast and where they can find you guys out there on the interwebs.
Oh, yes. So I have a podcast called Adapted to Screen where we read a book or some form of text and we watch the adapted TV series or movie and we discuss the differences. You can find us on every podcast provider that you could ever imagine. So Spotify, Good Pods, iPod, whatever it is. I don't know. And we're on Twitter if you look for us at Adapted to Screen. We are there. You can follow us and do whatever you like. But yeah, that's what we do.
Yes, by all means, go give them a 5-star rating. If you want to check out the shows that I was lucky enough to guest on, you can also find those episodes on our guest appearances page at notthatbadcast.com. Philip, thank you so much for this. You're always welcome, even if we do find ourselves talking about Clue somehow in some way.
But indeed.
Until next time, you guys know the drill. If there is a movie out there that you think is unfairly maligned or is just so bad that there is no way in Ohio that we can find anything good to say about it, hit us up on social media at NotThatBadcast or go to our website at NotThatBadcast.com. And while you're there, check out our coming soon page so you can see some of the movies that we're talking about so you can get your chime-ins in there. Until next time, he's Philip. I'm Jay. You guys are awesome. This is It's Not That Bad, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Take care.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.